Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're covering Season 3, Episode 5, Flash and Substance. If you've been following the show for a while, you know this episode was earmarked or earwing-marked for a special guest who has helped us cover the Scarlet Speedster-centric episodes before. Please welcome back to the Watchtower our pal, the roguish Steve Gibbons. Hey, Steve.
Hello to the lovely Cindy Franklin and to you, Chris, as well.
Thanks, Steve.
It's great to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no,
absolutely.
That we would have no one else. So it's great.
I would not have allowed you to have anyone else. I would have driven to Kentucky and shown up at your front door and stolen all your blow molds.
See, there you go.
Oh, God. Get a big truck.
You got a big truck.
Get a brick tractor trailer. Yeah. Old building full of them. Well, Steve, you're bona fides, as Rob likes to say, as a Flash fan and a DCAU aficionado. Have been covered before, so let's dive into this episode, shall we?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Flash and Substance originally aired February 11th, 2006, so there was about a five-month gap between this episode and the previous episode. So there was a little break, just for reference, so you'll know. It was written by Matt Lane, directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, with music by Michael McQuestion. In the cast, we had, of course, Michael Rosenbaum as the Flash, Kevin Conroy as Batman, Ron Perlman as Orion, Mark Hamill as the Trickster, Donald Gibson as Captain Boomerang, Alexis Denizov as Mirror Master, Lex Lang, again, the person that should be a Superman character, as Captain Cold, Kim May Guest as Linda Park, and Lanny Manella as the Mayor.
Hey folks, Chris here cutting in the future. Normally, Cindy and I record the synopsis after we record with our guests, but Cindy's under the weather, and she sounds really froggy, and I don't want to make her have to read this, so I'm going to do it myself. So here we go. In a seedy Central City bar, four of Flash's foes, Mirror Master, Captain Cold, Captain Boomerang, and the Trickster, lament their losses at the hands of the Scarlet Speedster. With the city honoring the hero with an appreciation day and the opening of a museum in his honor, they decide it's the perfect time to take him down once and for all. The next morning, Wally West leaves his job as police forensic technician early to head to the Watchtower and ask if any of his teammates want to join him at the opening of the Flash Museum. Batman eventually agrees, but Orion refuses to go along, finding the Flash to be an annoying fool. With an icy stare, Batman convinces him to come along. Flash is making his rounds through the city when he hears the cries of a little girl coming from an abandoned skating rink. Inside, he finds the girl to be nothing but a hologram and realizes he's walked into a trap set by the Mirror Master. Flash manages to dodge the lasers blasting from the disco ball above him and disarms the death trap. Later, he accepts the key to the city, but at the end of the ceremony, the sky becomes full of explosive boomerangs. After taking those down, he's hit by a large flying boomerang, which shackles him to its surface. Captain Boomerang, of course, appears on a monitor to gloat about his victory, but Flash manages to cause the boomerang to crash to the street below. Batman and Orion arrive, and the Dark Knight informs Flash that four of his super foes are on the loose and gunning for him. The four rogues confer on a rooftop, and Captain Cold suggests they just ambush their prey together at the opening of the museum later that night. They fly off on Legion of Doom sky cycles and leave the Trickster behind. After a stop at Wally's apartment for an undamaged costume, the three leaguers visit the villain's favorite bar. Following a brief altercation, Batman and Orion attempt to violently coerce information out of the Trickster, but Flash uses another approach. Calmly talking to James Jesse and showing concern for his mental health, Flash earns the Trickster's trust, and he tells them of the proposed ambush. Before they leave, Flash reminds James to turn himself in, which he agrees to do. At the museum opening, Batman and Orion stand guard, the Dark Knight having removed all reflective surfaces inside. They didn't plan on reporter Linda Park checking her makeup, however, and the rogues leap through it and into the building. Their battle with Flash begins as the trophies and displays are destroyed. Batman and Orion join in, but Flash is forced to jump into one of the mirrors when Linda falls into it. They find themselves in a strange dimension with thousands upon thousands of mirrors and no way to know which one will bring them home. Orion is frozen solid by Captain Cold, and the villains have the Batman down for the count when the Caped Crusader fires a flare gun that goes through the same mirror Flash had disappeared into. Linda sees this in the other dimension, and soon she and Flash are back. The fastest man alive quickly takes out Captain Boomerang, while Orion turns the tables on Captain Cold and freezes him and his gun with a loose water pipe. Mirror Master tries to escape, but Batman shatters the mirror with his batarang, leaving him trapped in its shards. In the aftermath, reporting live from the museum, Linda Park laments Central City's shrine to its greatest hero is destroyed, but Flash jokingly says he was just happy to be on TV. Orion believes he has Flash figured out, hiding a warrior's pain behind bad jokes, but all Flash cares about was that the bad guys were caught and no one got hurt. He calls that a good day.
Okay, so we open up outside of this bar, but strangely enough, even though we see the outside of it twice, there's no name on the bar. Did you guys notice that?
But they do mention the name of the bar. Flash does.
I thought he just said it was a seedy bar, didn't he? Did he name it? Did I miss it?
I think he did.
I don't know.
I don't think he did. I think he said they hang out in a seedy bar on the north side of town or whatever.
Okay.
It's like there's a graphic on the outside. There's a sign, but it's like just garbage. You know, it looks like a really funky font and it's illegible.
Okay.
I'm just surprised they didn't name it Gambies or something, you know, to tie into the Flash, like the guy that made the costumes for the villains or something like that. And he was also a character on Black Lightning, oddly enough, but the CW show. But I just noticed that. However, there are a ton of Easter eggs in this episode.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You just pause it anywhere in this episode and you've got something cool Easter egg that's Flash related or at least DCU related.
Yeah.
I mean this bar is full of rogues, and most of them are ones we'll never see again. I don't write down Mirror Master in the top walk past the bar. That's not who was the top and who wasn't. Somebody, I wrote down Mirror Master, and that's not who
there
it was.
I know at one point the Fiddler is shown in there. Dr. Alchemy is in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Who else?
The Thinker's there. He's got his late 60s supervillain costume.
The Weather Wizard from, as he's depicted in the Superman episode, is also in there as well.
That's who it is. The Weather Wizard in the top walk past the bar. That's what it is. I wrote down Mirror Master thinking Weather Wizard for some reason.
Those are not the same.
Yeah, and it's the Miguel Ferrer looking and voice acted, although we don't hear him. Weather Wizard, walking past. And the Fiddler's apparently passed out on the bar, which I think is funny.
Yes.
Heat Wave is behind him in a booth. Of course, we saw him last episode. And in another is Turtle Man and Abracadabra. So, there's a lot of Flash rogues hanging out in this bar.
it was great to see. It was wonderful. I was like, when I first saw this episode, I saw everyone in there. I was like, oh my God, everybody's in here.
And you're like, cool. There's him.
And, of course, as we mentioned, Mark Hamill returns as the Trickster, a role he played in the live-action Flash TV series from the 90s in two episodes, the 1990-91 Flash series, before he voiced the Joker on Batman the Animated Series and other DCAU shows. He's not quite as menacing here, but his look is a combination of his costume from that series and his hair from that series and the classic comic design. And we didn't know this at the time, but he actually returned to the role of the Trickster on the CW DC series as well. And I guess since he can't be the Joker anymore, thanks to this stupid bat embargo, it's great to have him back as the Trickster.
I love the design they gave him. I'm so happy that they made it into an homage to, like you said, the TV series, but also kind of were throwing in elements of the comic book. His appearance and his performance as the Trickster in this was one of the highlights of the episode, I think.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And of course, Cindy, you know, you and I watched you watched the Flash series when it was on, mm-hmm. Of course you called me one time when it was on, and
that was the first time I called you, and that's when we were getting together, and
I took the phone call. And my dad's like, well, it must be serious if he's willing to miss the Flash. And Andrew and I told this story to John Wesley Shipp at a convention. And yeah. And he looked at Andrew and said, boy, it's a good thing your dad took that call. If you ever get a chance to meet John Wesley Shipp at a convention, do it. He is a super nice guy.
You've said that before, that he's a super nice guy. And I think that's really awesome.
He was great. He was wonderful. Just one of the best.
For some reason, Danny and I didn't go with you.
I think you guys went to something else that day. But it was one of the best con experiences. This side of Kevin Conroy and Lauren Lester, it's like the best con experience I had. Of course, the Kevin Conroy stands out, you know.
Sure. But, absolutely.
We have the return of Donald Gibson, known for his work in Mel Gibson films. He returns as Captain Boomerang, previously seen in last season's excellent Task Force X. And we learn that's why Boomer is out and about, having his sentence cut down to 5 years, thanks to his stint in Task Force X, a.k.a. the Suicide Squad. So I thought that was a nice bit. Mirror Master is voiced by Alex Denizov, best known for playing Wesley on the Buffy spinoff Angel. They also appeared on The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina played the other, Thanos' early lackey in Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy, which I don't think I knew that.
No, me either.
Yeah, so that's him. I didn't know that, or at least it's his voice and maybe motion capture. I don't really remember exactly, you know, how that guy was created at this point. There's way too many Marvel movies packed in over top of it.
And you may have, I don't know if you just mentioned this, I may have missed it, but he also continued playing the Mirror Master in the one of the JLA movies. The one that was the adaptation of the Tower of Babel.
Doom or whatever.
Doom,
right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. He continued playing the Mirror Master there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And like, there were several. Wasn't Rosenbaum back as the Flash in that one too?
Oh, they brought the entire Justice League cast back. The characterizations were different. Yeah. So they were playing different, the same characters, but in different ways.
Yeah.
We're talking about characterization later.
Okay. Let me guess. Could the characterization of a certain character with the initials of LP be coming up for you?
Oh, yes.
I think you and I might be in an agreement here. I don't know. We'll figure it. We'll see. But go ahead.
That's a good point, though. You're right. Yeah, they were. It wasn't in the continuity of the DCAU, but they were a lot. Yeah. There were a lot of the voice actors come back. And, of course, that happened across, you know, Kevin Conroy and Tim Daly did Superman and Batman and the Public Enemies and things like that. There was a lot of that in those films. I honestly haven't kept up with them. I do know that the Crisis movies that they're doing, the third one's supposed to have both Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill back as Batman and Joker. That's what I'm hearing. And apparently, you know, there's a trailer out that shows them, although apparently it's not Mark Hamill's laugh you hear. So I don't know what that's up with. But yeah, but apparently it's something, you know, Conroy recorded before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Cape Crusader, the Batman Cape Crusader series is. There's now been images released through Entertainment Weekly of that. It looks really good. Mm-hmm. And apparently Kevin Conroy voiced Batman in that. So it'll be interesting to see where that's going. But let's get back to this episode. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Lex Lang spoke Heatwave's one line last episode, but here he voices Captain Cold. So that's not some nice symmetry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me think of, you know, that famous cover where they're both blasting Flash with heat and with fire and ice on, and he's like got his hands on his head, like, you know, it makes me think of that. It's the same guy, you know, so it's kind of weird.
And of all the four featured rogues in this, his voice acting, I felt, was the most sinister. Like his Captain Cold sounded menacing to me, as opposed to, like, Australian accents never sound menacing to me. So Captain Boomerang is Captain Boomerang. But Alexis Denisov as Mirror Master, he sounded kind of like appropriately, but, you know, kind of goofy. And of course, Mark Hamill was hamming it up as a trickster. The voice acting for Captain Cold, I was like, oh, he would kill somebody. Like, he's got some bite to him here. So yeah, I was impressed with that.
Yeah, I like that too, because unlike Challenge of the Super Friends, Captain Cold always kind of had more of a thuggy type voice than a lot of the other villains on there. Mm-hmm. So I like that kind of that semi connection. Although it is funny that he later orders milk because of his ulcer. So.
Yes. Well, they all order wussy drinks.
Yeah.
It's so funny because it has the one line. It's Mirror Master, I think it says, we're the hardest men in town. And then they all proceed to, and then the waitress shows up and she's like completely unimpressed by them, you know, and they all order wussy drinks after that. I'm like, come on, really? Although I will say Boomerang orders an Arnold Palmer, and that is my go-to drink of choice, like at picnics and whatnot. I'm like, okay, I can be with you on that one, sir.
Yeah,
because Arnold Palmers are delicious.
Yeah, the lemonade and the iced tea, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Especially
I have to take your word for it.
She can't drink lemonade, so.
Oh, okay.
No citrus. Well,
it's especially good when you throw a little vodka in it, but you know.
Nah, okay. I do like the Captain Boomerang because Captain Cold is concerned about his mortgage and says, you know, his wife's going to make him start like working at a grocery store if he doesn't make
sense. Yes.
And Captain Boomerang walks up and says, she was always a bit of an ice queen, that one, you know. Nice. the villains are swapping stories about how they almost accomplished their goal but were defeated by the Flash. But no one will let the poor trickster get a word in edgewise. He's just...
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, almost got him, you know.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
He's Croc.
Yeah, and then he's Croc.
I hit him with a rock. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, it also reminds me of I'm maybe jumping ahead a little here with comic connections, but I sent you guys those pages of Flash 800, where the villains are sitting around in the bar talking about... Now, they weren't dissing the Flash or complaining about him. Their conversation was like, you don't mess with the Flash. Go mess with any other superhero, but the Flash will not only take you down, but make you feel bad about it. Like, make you...
Right?
Like, one of them says that they'll like make you like reconsider your life choices, you know? And there's some really cool moments. There are some really like badass villains. Like, he takes down the Joker in a couple panels, but the funniest one is where he's going after Mordru, the wizard.
Yeah,
because Mordru has stolen a lollipop from a girl just to be mean, and the Flash is chasing him through dimensions to get the lollipop back.
Yeah, that was great. I like that.
You know, so that kind of that idea of the villains sitting around and just like talking trash or, you know, talking about their experiences with the Flash, that for some reason has become part of the Flash mythology of like the villains commiserating about their common shared misery at having to deal with Flash, particularly Wally West.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I feel like that comic you sent, the pages from that is definitely this episode had to be in the back of their mind somewhere. You
sure.
Know?
Absolutely.
And I love the bit where the fadeaway man's like, yeah, it's no big deal. I robbed the Central City Bank, and they're all like, you did what? Oh, we're going to jail now. And they're all trying to get up and leave and knock at the door, and there's Wally standing there, you know. That was great.
Oh yeah, it's a great little sequence. Yeah.
It is. That's a very fun comic. Thank you for pointing that to me. I know Andrew buys The Flash, but I've kept up with it some, but I didn't read that one. So
yeah.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Is he reading it now that it's gotten all kind of like Lovecraftian?
I don't know. I haven't asked him. I'll have to see if he has. Yeah.
It's an interesting take. I don't know if it's going to end up being my favorite run on The Flash, but it's definitely taking it in different directions. So it's an interesting approach.
Oh, that's yeah. Well, it makes me go back to me and Cindy covered on House of Franklin Center. Was that one story where I think it was like Flash plus Nightwing, where him and Dick like go on vacation and end up Lovecraftian like house. Remember that?
Oh.
And,
well, if you're looking for comics for the House of Frankenstein, look at this run because there are some genuine, like I said, Lovecraftian creatures that he is fighting, body horror. It's really an unusual take on the Flash, and like I said, I don't know how I'm gonna finally land on how I feel about it, but it definitely has a particular flavor, a particular feel to it. So, you know, I'm with it until like they lose me. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Okay. So just real briefly, what is the deal? I haven't kept up with this. Where's Barry Allen now in the comics? Is he gone again, or what's the deal?
Well, I don't know. and frankly, I mean, with all due respect to Barry fans, I don't care. because I've always been a Wally fan. And he's still around. I haven't followed it enough. At one point, I know that the Justice League members were supposed to be or thought dead, but they were really trapped in like a whatever that storyline was. I can't do the crossovers anymore. I'm too old and too impatient for them. But he's still around. He is, I think that he, whenever there is going to be a Justice League story, he's in the Justice League. Okay. And the solo adventures, for whatever reason, they're focusing on Wally. And of course, Wally's also in the Titans book as well now. Right. And so I don't know why they made the shift from Barry to Wally. I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth because I'm like, okay, Wally is back after they trashed him, you know, for the New 52. So I'm just going to enjoy the ride and read Wally's stories until they change their mind again, which they will inevitably do.
Yeah. I still think no one but Dan DiDio and perhaps I don't even think Jeff Johns. I think he was just told to do it. I think no one but Dan DiDio wanted to see Barry Allen come back, really. So I've always kind of been under that impression myself. But but speaking of Barry, well, I'm jumping ahead. Well, real briefly, we should probably mention, of course, the guys are swapping stories, and there's some funny things about, you know, shoving Captain Cold's cold gun up places and and making Mirror Master eat his laser kaleidoscope, and he's really upset. That was just a rumor, and it was a laser pistol, not a kaleidoscope. So that stuff was just fantastic. And Mirror Master proposes they ruin his appreciation day by killing him, and he stabs a knife through the paper with the headline announcing the Flash Museum's opening. This reminds me a lot of the Superman Revenge Squad scene at the beginning of Justice League episode Hereafter, in that famous cover where they're stabbing the Superman symbol, you know. So I thought that was a nice little bit of a callback. But speaking of Barry Allen, there is a guy who looks a lot like him.
Absolutely.
At the police headquarters, where we find out in this episode that Wally West is a police forensic scientist or a technician, at least. Does this actually work with the portrayal we've seen of Wally so far, Cindy?
To me, it's one of those things that, you know, there's a lot of people that I know that are goofy, but they're really smart.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Steve?
It wouldn't have been my choice if I was doing an adaptation of Wally, but I agree with Cindy. You know, I think Wally has proven in the series, despite being like a goofball from time to time, he's actually really smart. Don't forget, he outsmarted Batman at one point, which is something I don't think any of the other original members ever did. You know, he outsmarted in the Justice Lord storyline.
Yeah.
And so, if you can outsmart Batman, you're not a dummy.
I remember it being like, oh wow, they made him, you know, they gave him Barry Allen's job. That's interesting. Which, you know, throughout the history of adaptations, they've swapped elements from Barry and Wally and just interchanged them. So I guess
it just keeps me in mind, and I'm not going to name names or be real specific. So just in case if somebody hears this, they don't know, but there is a person that we went to high school with that was a stoner. That person is now a professor at a major university. And I'm like, what? How'd that happen?
This guy went across the stage in like jam.
People might figure this out. We don't want to get held for libel. Shut up.
I think the statute of limitation on him smoking pot in high school is over, Cindy. I think it's okay. But it's not like he was like killed somebody, you know. And while he's good at it, he nabs the crook by like sourcing the detergent they tried to clean the blood off their shoe with to the house of the victim.
Right.
So, you know, so that's great.
Which I'm not sure how strong evidence that would be, because I'm sitting in my kitchen right now. I've got a bottle of Dawn dish detergent sitting right here.
So
how many
we.
People
right,
have,
right?
You know what I mean? So does that mean that, you know, come on.
Right.
I think they're getting a little too excited about that evidence, but it's better than nothing, I guess.
Maybe it's a step in the right direction. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually his supervisor, his Barry like supervisor, is apparently voiced by Ron Perlman as well. Yeah. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Flash, you know, while he says goodbye to everybody, which I think is great, it shows he has this great relationship with his coworkers, and he walks into this, you know, little room where like there, it looks like there's like copy.
It's the copy room.
It's the copy room. Yeah, and he, you know, he touches his little earpiece and says, "Watchtower table for one," and they beam him out of police at HQ. But the poor staff of the Watchtower have to drive out into a cornfield.
Yeah.
And he's the Flash. He couldn't run to a cornfield, you know.
But out of fairness, you know, they probably, I don't know why they couldn't have made the technology applicable to everybody, but if you had to limit the instantaneous teleportation, you're going to give it to the major heroes who need to be, you know, moved immediately, whereas like the staff workers, they have time to go to a cornfield, you know. Yeah. I mean, do you really need a rush to get up there to go clean the toilets? I mean, come on.
True.
So I understand that rationale. Again, I don't understand why the technology would need to be limited. Why not spread it out to everybody who needs to be? But if they had to limit it, you're going to limit it to the people who need to be. Yes.
Okay. I'll buy that. Yeah.
We subscribe to your newsletter.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So on the Watchtower, Batman is on monitor duty because, you know, John has left per last episode. We see on the monitors that Superman is flying a javelin with Green Lantern and Vixen. Shiera is with Rocket Red. And Wonder Woman, Ice, and Red Tornado are also on missions. And it's kind of funny because Orion is just leaning against the wall like he's a very bored member. But Mr. Miracle and Barda were said by the Flash not to be members in the ties that bind, but Orion is, which is, if there's somebody that's not much of a joiner in the New Gods, I'd say it's Orion.
But I see him being there, especially where he's bored and stuff, that his dad has said, okay, you're going to do this for me, be a member of this
High Father.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not his real dad.
But what I'm saying is he's there kind of, you know, for political purposes.
He's the liaison with the Justice League. I can buy that, yeah. And Orion's been in the Justice League in the past. Him and Light Ray joined the Justice League International for a while.
And I also think he's hanging out with Batman because he's probably the one person that he respects on the team, truly.
Mm. You know, I think him and Superman G-Hall, but... You know.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, he's surly. He says, hey, here's somebody I can vibe with.
Yeah.
Or this is the person who least irritates me out of all these Jokers, you know.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
I've been there and done that. I've hung out with the person who's been quiet and is going to be the least talkative just because I know you're not going to irritate me or bother me because I've got stuff to do.
No.
Yeah.
I get it.
So Flash mentions the other founders, minus Jean, are busy, so he starts fishing for someone to go to the Flash Museum opening with him, and Batman apparently is aware because he asks him, why are you here? And Flash says his mom will be there and his uncle is flying in, so now we've had two inconsistent nods to Barry Allen, apparently. And he says, be great if one of the original seven made it. And I love how he is overselling it and underselling it at the same time. Mm-hmm. And when Batman doesn't answer right away, he slumps over in size. He's all just like, oh, just it's so funny.
Come on, man, please.
And I love the way Kevin Conroy just stretches this out. What time? You know?
Which, you know what, this sentence, that what time, it's a brilliantly written and timely delivered line. I mean, it says so much about Batman. One, it's what time, just cut to the chase, tell me what you want me to do, and let's do it. But also, it also shows just like he actually does understand Wally and care about him. Because he knows I'm the only one here, and Wally really wants one of us to go, I'm going to do it for him, you know?
Yeah.
And so it just, I when I heard, when they, you know, when I watched that in the episode and for the first time and I watched it again, I was like, God damn, this was a really well-written show.
Yeah, it really was. They really had these characters, just these versions of the characters mm-hmm. were just really thought out well. I mean, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And I love Wally's line, "You're a stand-up guy, Bats. Don't ever let them call you a crazed loner." He puts his hand on his shoulder. But I think it's funny, Batman, you expect, like in season one of Justice League, Batman would probably look at his hand like, "Get your hand off my shoulder."
Yeah.
But he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He just kind of lets him lay it there.
Yeah.
And he just kind of looks, you know, he doesn't like turn around and give him a dirty look or anything. So,
yeah.
But Orion, of course, is shaking his head in the background, which I think is funny too. But, you know, and actually, you know, Batman, I got to thinking about it. Batman on in the animated universe really isn't a crazy loner because he had Robin. Then he got, you know, Tim and Batgirl as, you know, regular partners. And mm-hmm. then he joined the Justice League. So, you know, he's now old man Bruce Wayne kind of becomes a crazed loner until Terry comes around. But, young Bruce Wayne's not really that much of a crazed loner, but it's still funny. So
yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things that I think the DC animated universe always got right about Batman, that even at times the comics got wrong, is that Batman is dark, he's surly, he's meant to be an intimidating figure, but at the end of the day, he really does care about people. He cares and really wants the best for people. And I hate to sound Pollyannish with that, but you know, that ultimately is what Batman is. And he doesn't want to see people get hurt because he cares about them. He doesn't want them to go through what he went through. And I think this speaks to why he decides to go to this museum opening for Wally, is because he values who Wally is. Like, he sees Wally as like this bright shining, you know, beacon of hope and a good person and a capable person. And he is caring enough to say, okay, I'm going to put my crime fighting on hold for a second to go and support him, because that's another way that I can help somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And as good an episode as this is for Wally, and that's Wally centric, I think it's an even better episode for Batman because it highlights that about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, it really shows that quality of Batman. Like, no, he's not a sociopathic loner. He's actually a deeply caring human being.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I like that. It definitely humanizes him. And I like to think that Batman, you know, I know he had a few moments where he kind of, like, I think in Starcross, when Flash like crashes the ship, he like gets in his face and like yells at mm-hmm. him or something. But you know, I kind of feel like, you know, Batman's used to dealing with younger partners. Wally's portrayal isn't that different than young Dick Grayson on Batman the Animated Series, kind of the young smart ass character. And mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll get into this, but maybe, just maybe, Dick Grayson and Wally West were friends in this continuity. We might have some evidence to point to that later. So that might be another connection, even. Who knows?
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So he's his son's friend type thing, you know, which I've always kind of got from the comics too, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a connection, but. Yeah, and Flash says he talks today has a lot to do, including practicing museum speech and polishing his boots. And I would imagine he would have to polish them quite often. And wasn't there a story, Steve, about how Flash's boots smelled weird or bad because of the friction? There's something in my head.
Yes, yes. I think it was during the Morrison run, if I remember correctly. Too.
Yeah.
We're like his, because of the overuse, just like, if you're a runner, your sneakers or whatever you're using are going to be funky at some point.
Yeah.
So I think the same thing with his boots, but I remember that, but I want to say it was in the Morrison run, but I can't say specifically off the top of my head right now.
That's what I was thinking too, the Morrison JLA run. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was Wally, of course. So yeah.
Well, if you've ever had a teenage boy in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I teach teenagers. You don't have to tell me anything.
Yeah,
I have a whole room full of them. Yeah.
Oh, what's real fun is when you have fifth graders, boys and girls, that haven't figured out deodorant is a good thing.
Yeah, they're transitioning through puberty and haven't figured out that all of a sudden you one day wake up and you stink. Yeah.
Well, the best is the combination of BO and Axe body spray.
Oh,
there is nothing quite like that aroma to clear out your sinuses.
Uh-huh. I know one year I had a kid that he thought, you know, he took a bath in that stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh, he thought he was a playa. And I'm like, oh, honey.
Chris, Cindy and I diverged into education talk. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I keep telling them they should start a podcast, but then they'll say they'll get fired if they start a podcast.
Like, yeah.
And then Orion, of course, responds to Batman saying, he'll go, I can't believe you let that fool manipulate you. You never see me at one of these museum openings. And then Batman just glowers at him. Mm. And Orion, the son of Darkseid, says, it's not black tie, is it?
He's like, crap, I've got to go.
So, Orion is apparently intimidated by Batman, which I think is funny. I know it's kind of a gag thing in a way, but it's like, would he really be? I don't know, but it's funny. You know, it's cute. So I let it go, you know? So.
Yeah, since this isn't a character that they have overly established in one way or the other, I mean, I know he's made appearances. But I give them a lot of latitude, especially with the characters that they're bringing in from almost like for a one and done type of appearance. I mean, yeah. I was okay with that characterization. I was not okay with some characterization later on, which is another thing, another point of agreement that Cindy and I will have, but we'll go, we'll get to that in a bit.
Ron Perlman returns as Orion, having previously voiced him in Twilight. In Justice League, he's working with Conroy here as an ally, when in the past he's mostly worked with him playing Clayface. And I don't think we need to introduce Ron Perlman or cover his work. You know who he is. He's Ron Perlman.
The Beast.
He's the Beast. Hellboy. You know, kind of, yes. You went to the Beast. I went to Hellboy. But yeah. which is one of my mom's favorite shows, The Beauty and the Beast, with him.
We watched it together.
Linda Hamilton. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. We get a nice transition with Flash's theme as we follow him POV style going under a sign that reads Central City, home of the Flash, 5 miles. So they are very proud of the Flash. We'll see that right off the bat. And then we see it in practice as he runs past fishermen, cab drivers, and he speaks to everyone. He's even recommended liniments to the cab driver for her bursitis. And yeah. They all congratulate him. So what do you think about this hometown hero angle?
Oh, I love it. It was absolutely charming. He is running in. He knows people. This is Wally, you know, because you would think that if he's at super speed, he probably has super memory, super fast memory, like can remember things and can, you know. So the fact that he would know so many people by first name, you know, I think it's a little weird that he's giving elderly women advice for their bursitis, but okay. I mean, you know, all right. Maybe he's got, because of his crime lab experience, he has that medical knowledge. I loved it. I thought it was great.
What about you?
Well, now does this? I'm trying to remember if this Flash has the ability to read any book super fast and retain the information.
Think so. Yeah.
Well, if he does, then he could recommend. Oh, here's the liniment that, you know. Just read a book real quick. Oh, this would work the best.
I stand corrected. You're probably right about that. But, you know, you're right.
That's true. Yeah, I know Bart.
Do you know how many times he said I'm right in this episode? I mean, already. This is the reason I like him.
Yeah.
Well, it's Mother's Day weekend. I'm helping you out here, Cindy. And I'm being nice.
Yeah.
Oh, but you say it all the time anyway. Again, this is why I like you.
Yeah, I know Bart like read a lot of books when he was going in between Impulse and becoming Kid Flash and the Jeff Jones Titans run. So yeah, he kind of got serious, you know. then Flash hears a little girl crying from an abandoned roller rink. Of course, she's a hologram, but her model looks a lot like the little girl who inadvertently helped bring Mordred down in Kid Stuff.
Uh-huh.
She just got brown hair versus blonde.
Yeah,
but I think it's the same, maybe the same model or very similar one. So. When Mirror Master appears via hologram and Flash calls his name, he says, you're quick as ever. And Flash rather slowly and hesitantly responds, yeah, well, you're not really all there. It's pretty clever, but I love how he's a bit slow on the draw, yeah, which Mirror Master points out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I like that these guys are not only physically enemies, they like to insult each other as well, which is just a lot of fun. I mean, you just get like, there's this almost like they're like neighbors that don't get along and like yell at each other over the fence or something. You know, you get that kind of, get that kind of feeling. Yeah.
Sure. Well, that's kind of always been this, I don't want to say jovial, but he's, Flash has always had a kind of frenemy almost relationship with his rogues. Like, and they, that even was truer with Wally, with the old rogues, as the old Barry rogues started like encountering Wally as the Flash, it became more of a, look, we, this, that was in the past, and you know, let's kind of like move on from that or something. Yeah, there was a different kind of relationship, certainly different than the type of relationship that Batman has with his rogues.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I mean, I know Geoff Johns like fleshed out the backstories, but I kind of hate that he kind of, we kind of lost that kind of you know, the relationship that like Mesner Loebs and Mark Waid built with the, with Captain Cold and characters like that. I mean, I know he kind of make, he made Captain Cold almost like an anti-hero, you know, which, you know, it's so, but yeah, I mean, there was some good stuff done there, but yeah, I, it, you know, Mirror Master, as he's trying to kill him with, you know, Death by Disco, and which I think, I mean, whoever thought of, oh, a mirror ball, that's a really smart way for Mirror Master to try to kill the Flash. I like it. You know, it, that's Matt Wayne, I guess, that wrote this. Mirror Master says, I was never fond of you, Flash, but I'm a reasonable man, and he's trying to kill him. You know, if you just look the other way every once in a while, we could have coexisted. Just let me rob a bank every once in a while, and we'd been fine, you know. and, of course, Flash, you know, he's, you know, like we said, he's pretty smart. He says that music's got to go and lets the lasers destroy the jukebox and then grabs one of the CDs and hurls it to cut the cord on the line on the disco ball, which then crashes and brings the whole thing down, which, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And slow as he was at coming up with a quip, you know, at the beginning of the fight, you know, this is something I think was always really cool about Wally in the series, is that he found smart ways to always, he always found smart ways to kind of take down the villain. You know, using his speed, you know, like when he sees the lasers are trailing him, so he runs them over the jukeboxes, you know, and then like you said, with the using the disc to cut down the mirror ball. I thought this is okay. He kind of redeemed himself for being not too slow on the uptake there, not knowing quite what to say, but then he knew what to do, which was the important thing.
Yeah. And I liked his line as he walks, you know, leaves, why not take some time and reflect on your mistakes? Then he comments to himself, hey, that was pretty good.
In a dad joke kind of way, but yeah. Right.
Well, then we go to the mayor giving Flash the key to the city, and she mentions his work with the underprivileged. And we saw that in Comfort and Joy, your favorite episode, Cindy, with the Ultra Humanite.
Yeah.
DJ Rub-A-Ducky. also the Thanagarian crisis is mentioned. So, yeah, that's not going away, Shiera. Sorry.
No.
Nor would it. I mean, yeah, that was a major event in the DCAU. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to. Yeah. The mayor is voiced by Lanny Minella, who has a ton of voiceover credit, mostly in video games like World of Warcraft, Mass Effect, God of War, The Last of Us, etc. So, if there's a video game, a series that's pretty popular, she voiced somebody in it, looks like. Flash's speech is short but heartfelt. It's basically, while you've all been so great to me over the years, it really gets to me, you know. I hope I always make you guys proud. And then the crowd goes, aw. And he responds, that's all. And this is what Flash had to work on.
But it's so Wally.
Yeah,
that is so Wally, at least in the series. I mean, yeah. You gotta love that.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And as he's walking through the crowd, what do you guys think about him talking to all the people he's walking past?
But that's the whole point. Wally is so fast that he has time to connect with all of these people, and he takes time to connect with all of these people. That's, you know, that's the reason he's the heart of the Justice League.
Mm, good point. Yeah.
You are correct, Cindy, once again.
If this was a drinking game, we'd get soused.
Yeah. I think it's funny, you know, that the boomerangs come flying, and one of the audience blurts out, "Boomerangs!" Now, it's hard to tell what these are because they're spinning and flying very fast. But do you think Central City is just used to being plagued by boomerangs because of Captain Boomerang?
That would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, no, umbrellas. You know, in Gotham City, it's umbrellas. You know. Yeah,
well, they're clearly very familiar with his villains because they feature prominently in the Flash Museum. So,
right.
Yeah, so they must know, oh, it's Boomerang. Oh, God, this loser's back again. Okay.
Yeah. And one of the funniest moments in this episode is Flash catching the boomerangs and throwing them and saying, that should do it. And then they turn and come back. And his response is a slap to his head and duh. Yeah. It doesn't say, he doesn't have to spell it out. We know what's going through his head. I love it. Yeah. And then he does, of course, the whirlwind trick, makes them all explode into one another. But he was too proud of himself because he gets scooped up by the giant rocket-powered boomerang from behind. And again, if Boomer could create something like this, I'm sure Waller and the government could find a use for it and he'd be rich.
Yeah, and then he wouldn't have to worry about bagging groceries.
Exactly. He wouldn't be worried about going back to jail, and his overhead would be taken care of that we hear about later. You know, it's like, let them pay for it and develop, you know, flying boomerang weapons for the government or something, yeah. You know.
Well, these aren't necessarily guys who are, you know, they maybe have a lot of technical knowledge, but they're not operating with a lot of common sense here. I mean,
right.
If you think about, I mean, I think we talked about this before with the weather wizard, like you create a machine that can control the weather and you're just going to create havoc with it. You're not going to sell it to the government. You're not going to, what?
Right.
Like, why are you not?
Exactly. We did talk about that. It's like, why not, you know, just like stop a hurricane before it ever starts. And
exactly.
You know, all that type of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I do like how one of the manacles doesn't grab Flash's left arm because he's moving around.
That's
a nice little touch. And it also sets up how it gets out. Mm-hmm. And Boomer, of course, appears on the screen. And I love how he says, he's going to kill you ugly, Flash.
That's gonna be a pretty death.
Right. And Wally's response is, I swear, when I get out of this, I'm gonna find you and hurl all over you.
Yep.
Oh man, that's funny. Because I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I know he's the Flash and he spins around, but he's in control of that. Uh-huh. So I mean, he's like literally spinning toward this mountain, which, by the way, isn't Central City usually in Missouri? With Keystone in Kansas right across the state line.
It's definitely in the Midwest. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they have rocky mountains like this in Missouri. I could be wrong. I've been to Missouri a couple times. They're usually covered in trees like they are here, you know?
Like
stone, you know, cleft mountains like that. But hey, you know, it's okay. But, you know, it works for the story, but couldn't Flash just vibrated through the boomerang and let it hit the mountain rather than crashing into the city streets? I mean, you know. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to apply logic to a comic book story, Chris, you're going to be, you know, in for a world of disappointment again and again. You know, you have to go with it. He's on a boomerang and a rocket powered boomerang flying through the city. Just, you know, have fun with that.
Yeah, you know. That's true. I am. I do have fun with it. I'm not. I'm just. It's because I'm talking about it on a podcast.
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time.
I do have to wonder, where is everybody in the streets, though? I mean, like, there's like when it crashes into the ground in front of Batman and Orion.
But Flash told them to scatter.
Mm.
I mean, you know, when
the whole town scattered.
But if they were all there for the speech, and he told them all to take, you know, to scatter. So
I guess so. Yeah. So. But it is a great visual for him to, you know, land right in front of Batman and Orion, and Orion very calmly says, you're tied to a very large boomerang, And Flash responds as if this is nothing unusual. Yeah. So this is another day in Central City, you know, it's just, I love it. It's like this, oh, this stuff happens like at least two times a month. You know, it's no big deal. After they discuss the four rogues are out to kill him, Batman insists they go with him to his apartment to change. And Flash groans and says a line that I included in our very first Justice League, our very first JLU cast trailer for The Flash. Okay, you guys are so slow. I imagine this is the curse of The Flash. It's annoying for normal, energetic people to deal with slower people. But when you're The Flash, it's like compounded by, you know, tenfold, 10,000-fold.
Like you get behind an, you know, this is awful, but you get behind an old person in, you know, either driving or behind them in a buggy in the store, and you're like, I'm on!
I love my father, but I mean, this isn't because he's older now, but ever since when I was a kid, my dad had been a policeman, and he had what he called the penitentiary shuffle. That means when you walk somewhere, you don't walk like you're, oh, I'm in a hurry, I've got a speed walk. No, he'd be like, slow down, son, come back here, slow down. We were going into a store somewhere, slow down. Come, stay, you know, like basically stay with me, you're walking too fast. And I just like, and that's kind of, I feel like I'm Wally and, you know, my dad was Batman and Orion, basically, you know.
You know, I can relate to that. My dad was a cop too. And,
okay.
Yeah. And did your dad though, my dad walked slowly too, not because he's infirm or anything, but just for that. I never called it never heard it called the penitentiary shuffle, but did your dad drive like a bat out of hell though?
No, he really wasn't that. No, not really.
Oh, okay. My father is a speedster on the road.
Okay.
Because in Delaware, you know, if you're a state trooper, you get pulled over, you just flip your badge, and you know, and they give you a nod, just a reminder to slow down next time. Wink, wink.
Oh, gotcha.
That type of thing. Not to tell tales of my dad or anything.
Okay. You know. Statute of limitations.
Yeah. No,
your dad was a beat cop though. He wasn't, you know.
Yeah, he was a patrolman just in town. Yeah, so.
Gotcha. And full disclosure, my father and I have the same name, Mark Stephen Givens. And when I was a teenager and I would get pulled over as infrequently as that was for speeding, I would show my license, and more often than not, the cop would know who my father was from the name, and it did get me out of a couple kerfuffles. So,
Okay. You know,
I think a couple. I think that's the root number of something else.
Yeah. Steve was Paul Walker when he was a kid, you know, Fast and Furious.
As if I ever had a car like anything that Paul Walker would have had. No, I never. But I grew up around a lot of back roads. And so like Wally, it would have been, it's just the temptation to go fast was too much for my teenage testosterone fueled, you know, spirit.
Gotcha. You know? Now we know why it relates to The Flash.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cop. Super speed.
Yes, exactly.
We then cut to a rooftop, and the four rogues are commiserating with Cold and Incredulous that Boomer wants them to all kick in for that fiasco. And the big boomerang launcher is straight out of Boomer's first appearance in Flash number 117, December 1960. And when he tried to kill Batman with the same thing in Batman number 322, April 1980, which I bought off the shelves back in the day. Also, I think I got it in a Whitman three pack. So, and Mirror Master says, Boomer, must you always bleed poverty? So Boomerang is that guy always whining about money. But unlike Mirror Master, he can't pull another mirror out of your blinking arsenal, which is skirting language.
Blinking arsenal is code for.
Especially coming from him, the word arse. You're blinking arse and all, the way he says arse, you know. So, but I have to ask, the trickster relates his plan, which, how is it any worse than theirs? I mean, 400 cases of greased fake dog vomit sliding into a spiked wall that drops the boxes of the vomit on Flash, and then everything explodes, you know. So it's far more humiliating. It would probably actually work, and they just stare at him and then ignore him.
Yeah.
Poor Trickster.
I think the problem is that the Trickster, unlike the other three, dared to actually articulate what he planned to do. And when you say it out loud, it sounds like the stupidest thing ever. Like if you talk about, if Mirror Master had articulated his plan out loud, it would sound, I'm going to have a jukebox and play some disco music and shoot lasers at him from a disco ball. You know, that I'm like, that's just as crazy as what the Trickster was saying, but the Trickster's actually said it, you know? So I think it's one of those moments like, oh, that's, yeah, that sounds really dumb, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the others are just like, I got a plan. I just need your money and let me go and, you know, and do my thing. And the Trickster's like, no, here's my plan. And they're like, oh yeah, that's really dumb. But you yeah. know, they're not very self-reflective rogues here, so to speak. You know, they're yeah, not they're
even
not
Mirror working. Master.
Yes.
Sorry, I had to make the same joke Flash did. Yeah, the Trickster's plan reminded me of in the John Wesley Shipp series when he threw like a ton of gumballs in the street, and literally the Flash was like couldn't keep his footing. Yeah. And he finally just like fell on his butt, like in the middle of the street as he ran away. Like, that's what it reminded me of, you know? So it's like, which was a great sequence. So, so Captain Cold suggests they just ambush him at the museum opening, and they fly off on the same type of sky cycles that the Key was riding in I Am Legion. So apparently these are Legion of Doom secret society sky cycles. I don't think we ever see any of them with the group. So were they just adjacent members? Is this part of Grodd's co-op type system? Yeah. You know, it's like, hey, I'll throw in a free sky cycle, you know, if you
and please notice there are only three sky cycles. They're yeah. not, how is Trickster supposed to get wherever they were going after this?
I think Trickster literally was just following them around town. Like he literally like he saw him, he was like following the sky cycle and like he like walked like 20 flights of stairs up to the rooftop to get up there. You know, but they were all like, oh, the giant boomerang, this is stupid and all that. You know, and he just like walked in on them. Hey, guys, you know.
Yeah, he's that one friend that you don't really invite places, but still shows up anyway.
Right.
You know, that
yeah.
type of thing.
It's like, oh, it's you again. That type of thing. Yeah.
It's how I imagine you guys feel about Shag from time to time. You know, I'm joking. All
Orion, we go to Flash's apartment, and Orion isn't too impressed with it. But I don't think it looks so bad.
No.
It's a nice apartment. He does wreck his last Lightspeed Bar talking standee, which is a callback to Eclipsed. In that episode, Flash fought actors playing Captain Boomerang, Heatwave, and Mirror Master. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the first time we saw them, but it wasn't really them. It was actors playing them. And of course, at the end, you know, Mofear takes over some of his advertising work. And, you know, and then of course, Superman brought up when he was going, you know, giving Captain Marvel the riot act for endorsing Luthor. We don't endorse candidates. We don't sell products. And he like flipped the Flash and Flash is all like, you know, sinking in his chair. So. then we get a scene. What's the next scene there, Steve? I know you want to talk about
it. Oh, the scene. And I think it's the first time they show it in the series because they have the music playing when he does it. And they make it's almost like it was the exact same thing that they did with Wonder Woman the previous episode when she did her twirl for the first time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Flash puts on his ring. Opens it up and he does the classic, the costume shoots out of the ring and he at super speed puts it on. You know, it's if you're a Flash fan, that is one of the most quintessential iconic classic moments of a Flash, of any Flash. Except I don't think Jay Garrick ever had a ring.
No.
I don't know if they changed that for later iterations or whatever, but you know, it was a Barry thing, it was definitely a Wally thing. And so when they did it, it was like, you know, every fanboy box was checked for me, you know, yep. When I finally saw him do that. It was so awesome.
Yep, it was definitely for me too. And this, and I will tell, I've never mentioned this before. When I was a kid, I had a Flash Underoos shirt, and then my mom actually made me a Flash mask. And I had like a cheap ring that came from a gumball machine, and I would put that ring on, and I would like, I would take my flasher, I wouldn't have it on, and I'd take it and I'd like throw it like I'd like was shooting out of my ring, and then I put my shirt on and put my mask on and then run around the yard. So
and then you turn 16.
Exactly. And that was right. Then Cindy dropped by and said, "What are you doing?" No, I'm just kidding.
You were so cute when you were little. Oh, I wish I'd known you when you were little. You were an adorable little boy.
Yeah. A little bowl cutting nut right around here. It's kind of like those pictures you see of, you know, when they show Barry when he was young, dressed like Jay Garrick, you know. Like, yeah, he would dress up like Jay Garrick and stuff. Oh, and probably the reason Jay didn't have that is how the hell would he get that helmet in the ring, you know?
That's true.
It's stuck again. Damn it. He's like, beat it against the table at the JSA meeting, and Alan Scott's like, "Come on, dude, we got to go. Her Digaton's like erasing history right now, you know?" Oh, yeah. I do. My one little quibble is this. He's already in a torn up Flash costume. I kind of wish we'd seen him do it right before he beamed up at the police station, just so we could see Wally West turn into the Flash.
Oh, so
that's my one little minor, but it's still great to have it. I'm not going to complain, because even though apparently I am, it's still wonderful and I love it. Yeah. You like the music kicks in. He's got a bunch of Flash rings. It's like he's got multiple ones, and he's like, the real trick's getting them back in there, you know.
But you know, because he does it there in his apartment, we get that really cool moment where Batman looks in the drawer and closes it, and I'm just, you know, the subtext there for me is Batman is thinking, I have a whole bat cave and this guy has like no security. You know, and he's just got his ring laying in some random drawer, you know, like it's supposed to be a sock and underwear drawer, and he's got all these rings in there, and anybody could just walk in and open the drawer, you know, and be like, "Oh, I found the Flash's hideaway," you know.
Yeah, and I mean, Batman's probably thinking, "I could use something like that," you know. And I know, wasn't it Brad Meltzer revealed that like Flash made, like Barry made a version of that for everybody in the Justice League, and Ollie had one when he wrote Green Arrow, Brad Meltzer, I think.
I think that's the thing.
When Brad Meltzer was writing a really good run on Green Arrow after Kevin Smith, right before he did Identity Crisis.
The crossover that shall not speak its name.
That's right. Right. Batman tells Flash to take the attempts on his life more seriously, and he refers to his enemies as Manure Master and Captain Koala.
Oh, gosh.
And I don't know if I'll ever, I know I've watched this episode multiple times, and it's one of my favorites. It was one of Andrew's favorites. He always wanted to rewatch this one because he's a big Flash fan as well. Mm-hmm. But I think from now on, I don't know if I'll ever get Manure Master and Captain Koala out of my head for those characters. That's just brilliant. And it's like a insult a kid would come up for somebody, which I like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, well, you're Manure Master. Yeah. Captain Koala, not so much, but it's still funny. That's maybe slightly racist, but, you know, I mean, not racist, but, you know, I don't know, nationalityist or something. You know, Paul Hicks, if you're offended, I'm sorry. You know, just you're listening, but, you know, it's...
Well, as I said in the first episode that we ever podcasted together, nobody cares about Australia, so who cares? I'm joking.
Hey, the invasion took them out, you know, right?
So, yes.
Right, yeah. Flash says he'll round them up tomorrow because they all hang out this little hole in the wall on 4th Street. So I think that's what he says. I don't think he names it. Okay. So why doesn't Flash just run through there nightly? You know, just, I mean, he is Flash, you know. I guess he's just like, you know, I'll catch him. But yeah, he is the Flash, and he'll catch him eventually. So when they walk in, Pied Piper is sitting with Turtle Man, and Abracadabra jumps over a booth seat and runs out. And of course the fiddler's he's still at the bar, and he's freaked out, and everybody runs out. Are we surprised that they let the rest go? Do you think they are, you know, free at this moment? Are they supposed to be out of prison, or did, what do you think?
I mean, they're not, they're literally just having a drink at their local bar. They're not doing anything wrong.
But are any of them wanted?
If they are, I don't think that they're, Batman's not concerned with that. Like, because yeah. they've got the mission at hand. I think Flash, Wally, his relationship with the Rogues is just what you said. I'll get to them when I get to them. They're not really dangerous like people. They're not homicidal maniacs like the Joker, you know, and you see that as evidenced by how he handles the Trickster. And we talk about that in a second. But I feel like the relationship that Wally has with the Rogues, it's, you know, you guys, you're a mischievous bunch of ragamuffins, and I'll get to you when I get to you, that kind of, that type of thing.
They're not murdering people. They're just robbing banks and stealing, you know, diamonds.
Exactly.
They're not psychotic. I mean, they're not like murderous psychotics or anything like Gotham City. So Trickster is talking to himself, lamenting his treatment, and says they probably would have gone for it if I were a captain. So I thought that, you know, Captain Boomerang, Captain Cold. I mean, it does say, why are there so many captains in both heroes and villains? You know, I guess it all started with Captain Marvel, I guess, and just went from there. Flash has to clear his throat to get him to notice them, but Trickster quickly draws and fires his snot gun, which is hilarious. It's a shotgun with a nose and a mustache at the end of it that shoots acid snot and melts a pool table because Batman kicks it away. Then Batman steps aside to let Orion make him talk, which I think is interesting.
Batman is the good cop.
Yeah, Batman's good cop here. And he's also like, normally Batman's the muscle, but he's got a new god with a chip on his shoulder with him. So. And Orion's line is great, but man, it's scary. Talk while you still have a jaw. You know, it's just like, wow. Just think about that. Like, oh God.
But then Wally steps in and proves, you know, that he knows his town, he knows the city, he knows the people in it. And I found this to be one of the best moments, not only in this episode, but in the show. You know, this is going back to Cindy, I think you'll understand this. You know, sometimes when you have a troubled student, someone who's got real issues, you know, talking to them calmly and not coming at them can be the most effective thing to bringing them down. And I saw that with Wally here. I mean, not to put too much more into it than it deserves, but I was like, yeah, you know, sometimes if you know you're dealing with somebody who's a little loony, you got to kind of talk to them, you know, just talk, you know, and not, yeah, can't readily threaten them into doing what you want them to do type of thing.
When a kid is in a storm, you don't add lightning to it.
Mm. Exactly. Exactly.
Nice. Even more appropriate with Flash. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really love that. I mean, it's, you know, he says, you know, you're off your meds again. And he says he takes him when he's down, and Flash says that's not how the medicine works. So there's some actual medical truth about mental health in this silly episode.
Right.
But there is, you know. And he says, listen, James, you're wearing the suit again. And he's like, I am. And then he pulls it out. Well, what do you know? So I like that bit, you know. It's like, how could you not know you have that outlandish mess of a costume on? Then Flash, you know, promises him if he informs on the others, they'll come to the hospital and they'll play darts, the soft kind.
Yeah.
You know, which I like that too. And he tells him about the museum ambush and they go to leave. Orion reminds him, what about your enemy? And what about Flash's response, Steve?
Oh, it's perfect. It just, you know, oh yeah, when you finish your drink, go turn yourself in. You got me again, Flash. Yeah. You know? Just you know, it's a humorous and a heartfelt moment. You know, it's just and it really punches up something they were trying to, I think the point they're trying to make about Wally is that you know, he really cares about the people in Central City. He is really connected to them. And he's not really just out to bash people or bash the bad guys and kick ass and take names type of thing. Like he feels connected to these people. And, you know, I know he's, has more adversarial relationship with the other three rogues, but at least he's able to say with the trickster, hey, this is a sick man who just needs some care and attention. He needs help, you know? So it's like this is the writing in this, there's a lot of layers to it. And I've always appreciated how well done this episode was in terms of the writing.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And you got to wonder, is Batman thinking, maybe I should get Wally to stop by Arkham? You know, I mean, could he sit down and talk to Two-Face? And not the Joker. And it's like, you're flipping the coin again, Harvey. You know, that type of thing. You know, but I think that's another thing. Batman respects that Flash actually has a handle on crime in his city this way, and how how he treats. And, you know, and the animated Batman, you know, for the most part was portrayed pretty, you know, he was pretty compassionate toward his foes, except maybe the Joker, obviously. But, you know, like with Baby Doll, and, you know, mm-hmm. like he actually, she like comes up
an
to his
ace.
Leg at the end, huh?
An ace.
Yeah, an ace. And of course, Ace. Yeah. On here, of course.
Yeah.
And of course, Harvey, because he's friends with Harvey. But, you know, I mean, I think Batman, again, that's the humanizing part of Batman that we have on here, that looks and he respects the way that the Flash handles these situations as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. And now we're at the museum, and oh boy, are there Easter eggs. And they're like Easter eggs. They're Easter eggs that make you question the continuity of the DCAU and wonder if there are entire aspects from the comics that have to exist that we've never seen. Like the very first one, there's a family posing a baby in front of Jay Garrick's helmet, mm-hmm. Which is like, okay, so was Jay Garrick the Flash in this continuity?
And unless I'm mistaken, Bruce Timm and all the other creators behind the show have remained silent about what their intentions were. They have never said one way or the other, like especially what the Jay Garrick helmet meant. I remember that this lit up discussion among fans when this episode came out, and because of all the Easter eggs, mm-hmm. Particularly the Jay Garrick helmet. So, this is one of those scenes where you freeze frame it, you're going to see something in the background that's going to be like just blow your mind if you're a Flash fan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we had the streak from the Justice Guild, who was a fill-in Jay Garrick. And of course, the Justice Guild was originally going to be the Justice Society. And Paul Levitz asked them, don't use the Justice Society in this way. So I don't think they ever answered it either. And that's, you know, and I kind of like that they didn't in a way, because that way you can fill in the continuity in your head if you want to.
Sure.
And we're going to get something else that's definitely in a minute that blew my mind even more than that. But of course, we get statues of just about every rogue. Grodd, and I love the look on Grodd's face. It almost looks like he posed for it, because he's like got his eyes like up in his head over to one side, like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to stand here and pose for the statue. Trickster, Pied Piper. And then, Cindy, who do we meet?
Linda the Airhead Park. Holy crap. How on earth, and I'm sorry, you're going to have to listen to this.
Okay.
How on earth do you come from these people who have written such strong characters, Vixen, you know, Wonder Woman, Shiera, all of these wonderful female characters, and then she's like, you know, and Linda Park in the comic books was portrayed as career driven, mm-hmm. her own person, not, oh, fiddle dee dee. And I'm like, holy crap, what a freaking loss. I mean, now granted, they went too far on the Flash TV show of saying, we are the Flash. I get, you know, that annoyed me too.
Yeah, with Iris, yeah.
Yeah. But with this person, you're like, she's her own person, her own right. She does her own thing. They are a team, but they are also both their own separate entities. In this episode, I mean, women's rights just went, oh my God. What?
Once again, Cindy, you were right. You know, you echoed everything that I was feeling about how Linda was portrayed in this. This is the one unfortunate mark on this episode for me, because they could have had her do everything she did in terms of the plot without that characterization. And I don't know why they turned it into that. I don't know if they were trying to be humorous, like just show how people are enamored of the Flash. But then don't use Linda Park. If you want to do a reporter, a generic reporter. But if you were a Flash fan, especially a Wally fan, you were scratching your head over this characterization of Linda just because of everything you just said, Cindy.
And Wally seems kind of oblivious to her mooning over him, which is also funny because Wally, as in the past, has been portrayed as such a horn dog. But as we've said, when a woman actually reciprocates, he doesn't know what to do, like fire, you know. But it's I think maybe what their intention was to show, okay, hey, this is the only Flash episode we're going to do. We're almost out of episodes. Let's introduce Linda and really egg on that. Okay, this is who Flash is going to end up with because she's so in love with this guy. But they make her come across as just this total fangirl. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's okay for her to be attracted to the Flash. I mean, even that first thing, like the first joke about, yeah, he's hot or something, and she's on air, that'd be fine. But it's the thing at the end when she's like, you're our only hope, you know, and this was our shrine to you and all that. And she's like,
why? She's leaning into him like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, she's just right up in his face. You know, that's the part that really puts it over the top. I mean, you know, a little bit would have been fine to show, okay, she's attracted to this guy. And it also is kind of funny that Wally's just kind of too goofy to quite figure it out, you know, which, I mean, you know, that happens.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know, I'm that way too. But, you know, it's, I agree with you guys. It's like, you know, the first time I watched this, I was so excited about all the Flash stuff. But when you watch for a podcast and you examine it, you're like, yeah, Linda was always like, I mean, when they first introduced Linda, she was just like, wasn't even impressed with Flash, uh-huh. if I remember right, in the Mesmer Loeb's run. And, you know, then they eventually got closer. And of course, she becomes the rock that brings Wally back from the Speed Force. She's his beacon. Yeah. She's the mother of his kids, his wife, you know.
Yeah.
So she's the most, and she's the love of Wally West's life. And she's a real airhead fangirl in this episode.
Yeah, and there was really no reason for them to do that. Like the humor, like you said, they could have made that point with the humorous she's attracted to him, and the writers were good enough. They could have made that a more subtle thing than that. That's a shame. Like I said, that's the one black mark I have for this episode. So
me too. Yeah. Linda. Well, actually, she's never called Linda in the episode.
Yeah, she is.
Is she?
Yeah. Because the person that's talking to her, filming her, or whatever, says Linda.
Oh, does she?
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I didn't catch that. Sorry.
Yeah, I did.
She's voiced by Kim May Guest, who voiced Jennifer Morgan in Silver Banshee in Chaos at the Earth's Core. So she probably recorded these lines around the same time, I would imagine, because she didn't have a whole lot of lines in that. She does mention the Central Keystone area in her telecast, so that, you know, the fact that they're across the bridge from each other is a thing here as well, which that was the whole redo of the Earth, the Flash of Two Worlds thing that Grant Morrison wrote in the final issue of Secret Origins when the city disappeared, you know, Keystone City disappeared for decades or whatever. Notice there's two Flash symbols on the wall. One is like Wally's that he wears on this series with the one zigzag. The other has two zigzags, like the classic comic version originated by Barry. So again, does Barry Allen exist? As we discussed in Shadow of the Hawk, the producers were considering a flashback episode with Barry, Hal, Hawkman, etc., and that eventually evolved into the Hawkman episode. So that might have been somewhat of a leftover from the continuity they were trying to untangle for that, and they just like, let's slip it in here and make people insane. You know? So.
I just look at it as a great Easter egg. Like, if you are, like, it's just a nod to the history.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to look anything more into it than that, because it will make my brain bleed. So
yeah, just like yeah. Batman and Orion are standing watch outside, and Batman says he's removed all mirrored surfaces from the building. Too bad he didn't check everybody's purse as they walk through. you know, so and Orion floats in his astro harness before the giant Flash statue and says, "Central City builds statues to this fool who makes bad jokes, who concerns himself with pitiful men like the trickster. I don't understand." And then he flies off, and Batman responds, "No, you don't," which speaks volumes, you know. Yeah.
Well, exactly.
How Batman feels about the Flash and how Orion just doesn't get it, you know. It's like, yeah. But Orion's also an alien demigod born of the most evil being in the universe and raised on this, you know, in this paradise by the, you know, nearly, you know, saint-like High Father. So, you know, his grasp on reality isn't.
Yes. Cool. Yeah. Like, you think he might be a little disconnected from the everyman, you think?
I think so, yeah. Linda tries to get an interview, and Flash is signing autographs. We see a globe with Flash and Superman racing around it, and a direct nod to Speed Demons from Superman Animated Series, which we talked about, Steve. He agrees to the interview. She hands him a slip of paper with her phone number, and on automatic, he just autographs it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And that's something that rolled my eyes. And Cindy, let me ask you something. Is that something I've never had? I mean, this speaks to the lack of game that I have. But I've never had a woman just wantonly give me her phone number without me prompting for it, or without, you know, there being some obvious, "Hey, let's get together next time." You know, is that something that women actually do? Just randomly give a guy they like their phone number without any kind of prompting?
Honestly, I can't speak to that, because Chris and I have been together since I was 15 and he was 16. So.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sorry.
You had other ways to trap him.
No, I mean, I just found the right fella, and I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. And it wasn't actually that long after I was running around the house with my Flash costume on, really, in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. It really wasn't.
I'm sorry. That was not intentionally sappy, but it was sappy.
No, it's...
No, I understand. It's like... that was another moment that's made me roll my eyes. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, it seems pretty forward, you know, without actually having a conversation with him.
It seems kind of desperate, not forward.
Yeah,
not
yeah. You know? Desperate, you're right. You're right. Forward isn't the... I mean, if she's like, "Hey, would you like to go out and get something, you know, to eat, to go out on a date sometime?" That'd be different, but it is kind of like, "Hey, big guy, here's my phone number," you know.
Yeah. I mean, guys have given me their number, and I've just been like, file 13, to, you know.
Who are these guys?
She's remaining. Oh, she's ominously silent there.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I'll do like Orion and, you know, talk while you still have a jaw, you know.
No, Chris, honey, you know, come on.
I know. Then we get the villains jumping through the compact mirror that Linda's checking her makeup in, which is a nice, I like that bit. It's a cool visual of them. And I think that was in the end sequence of the previous episode, and you just saw them like jumping through. Like, you couldn't tell what they were jumping through. I'm like, where are they coming from?
Right.
You know? It was pretty cool. We see a giant top, a horn, and a tricycle, which are souvenirs from the top, Pied Piper, and I guess the Trickster. I guess that would be the Trickster with the tricycle. And the Rogues.
I would think so.
I would think it would be. I can't think of anybody else that, you know, this isn't Superman, so it can't be the Toy Man. So,
sure. Yeah.
The Rogues want to see who hurts him the worst, and Flash deflects their weapons with the statue of himself that was shown punching out Weather Wizard in the top. And like we said, looks like Miguel Ferrer. Boomer blows up the Turtle Man display, and he gets a lot of Turtle Man gets a lot of visual nods in this episode. We saw him.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a minor Flash villain, really, even though he was the first super foe that Wally fought in the second story, or Barry fought in the second story in Showcase number 4, which I kind of find interesting. So that might be one reason. So there's a javelin replica, some weird Earth globe that looks like it's like also a mine, which I don't know what that story's from, but just
you
a lot
see
of
the Superman and Bat Superman and Flash running around the Earth. That's in the background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's several shots. It's there. Yeah. The fight's great. Flash takes out Boomerang. Batman and Orion arrive. And surprisingly, Captain Cold destroys the Astro Harness with one blast and sends Orion sliding away on the big ice blow he made, which is like, man, I would have thought New Genesis technology would be more resistant to ice than that. You know, it's like, man, what's Hymon doing, you know, on making these things on New Genesis, right? It's like, come on, dude.
Maybe ice is to New Genesis the way the electricity is to Superman from the first few seasons.
Ice is evil. Yeah.
Yes.
But then Batman is fighting Mirror Master and does some leaps past a glass display holding a figure wearing what costume, Steve?
Oh, is this the Kid Flash?
Yes.
Yes. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I was like, okay. Yeah. And this is the moment that blew your mind, I take it.
Yes. So Kid Flash. So was Wally Kid Flash? Was, Michael Rosenbaum also voiced Kid Flash on Teen Titans, first in season 5, episode Lightspeed, which aired December 3rd, 2005, which is just about 2 months before this one. So is this a nod to the Titans show? Are they linked? Someone tell us. We're going to get in a future episode another direct connection to the Teen Titans show. So the one thing that's always got me, and I know there's different theories on this, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but the thing that hangs this up is Robin, because any Robin that was seen on the animated series, whether it's Dick or Tim, doesn't seem to jive with the Teen Titans' very serious-minded Robin that they had on there, who was pretty humorless and, you know, was much more driven. He was like that version of Robin when Marv Wolfman and George Perez were basically, when Dick was trying to figure out who he was and am I going to be more like Batman or less like Batman? You know, that whole arc before he became Nightwing. So that's the one that hangs me up. But it's like just the fact that you see Kid Flash's costume, just, oh my God, I remember being like me and Andrew freaking out that there's Kid Flash's costume, you know. So it still gets me. And I know we shouldn't make a big deal out of it. It's just an Easter egg, but it's just fun to think about. It's like, was this, you know, and that might also go with, they never come out and say it because they didn't make those decisions. But if Wally was Kid Flash when the Justice League first formed, and if they knew a previous Flash, like say Barry was the Flash or Jay was the Flash, then their treatment of Wally early on, it can kind of work into that. It's like, oh, it's Kid Flash, which is the way a lot of the Justice Leaguers treated Flash, Wally, in the early days of when he took the mantle of the Flash, especially Elongated Man, who would not quit busting his balls in every issue of Justice League Europe, because he wasn't Barry, and here's Kid Flash playing the Flash. You know, so it kind of works, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and you know, Chris, I love and respect you dearly, my friend. I have been a Flash fan since I was 12 years old, and you have already thought more about this than I ever did. mad respect for your thought processes. For me, though, it was just a nice visual, like, oh yeah, Kid Flash, you know, like, you know, it's a nod to the general history, and I loved it. And it excited me as well. It did not prompt me to go on one of my usual diatribes. So, you know, I appreciate your thoughts.
Okay, I'll take the board down. I have in the other room connecting the string. Looks like it comes out of the questions quarters at the Watchtower. I'll take it down. Connecting. I think the Watchtower, there's a great YouTube channel about the DC Animated Universe and Justice League called the Watchtower on YouTube. And they have the Watchtower database. And I think they have done several videos where they lose their minds over trying to make all this work. and it's fun because they have fun with it. They joke about how we're going insane trying to figure this out. So we'll let you guys go find those videos if you want to dive down that hole. I've taken enough of Steve and Cindy's time with this. But I do like that Boomer grabs a boomerang from the statue of himself and says, "Hey, been looking for that. but they put real weapons, real active weapons out in this museum.
Well, nobody said the people of Central City were particularly bright.
Right.
You know, I mean, they created a great museum. Hey, it's okay if we put like live weaponry out where anyone can just grab it. Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, yeah. But, yeah. You know.
I do like Mirror Master's gun that shoots out little mirrors everywhere. That's kind of cool. It's a nice, you know, and it looks like ones we've seen in the comics. So, and of course, Mirror Master does the whole multiple hologram trick through those mirrors. Even David Cassidy did that on the 90s series when he was the Mirror Master on there. So Linda yells, time out, time out, runs off. And
another place that I'm like, really? You have somebody that is a reporter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's not going to either A, make sure she's out of the way, but still able to see all the action, or B, hello, let's actually take some agency and do something.
Hmm.
Yeah.
She does something. She trips into a mirror and goes into a mirror dimension.
I'm sorry. I have issue. I mean.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, Cindy. I'm thinking about this image I have of Linda. Probably one of the most prominent images I remember of Linda from the comics. I believe it was from Flash 100. And it was I believe the main villain was Savitar. Mm-hmm. And all hell was breaking loose. And it was drawn by the great Mike Waringo.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an image of Linda. She's ready to go to battle, and she's hauling out this like giant ass gun that Ellen Ripley would have had trouble holding on to, you know. And you know what I'm talking about. And she's like, "Let's go! I'm ready to kick some ass." And I just like this thing. Oh, time out, time out. I'm like, oh, give me a break. I mean, did these people even pick up a Flash comic and read this character at all?
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I don't want to sound like I'm trashing the episode because everything else was cool. But yeah, this was like, nails on a chalkboard to me every time Linda spoke.
You know? Yeah.
Any romantic partner could actually long-term be with any hero, male or female, without being a strong person in their own right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't seem like a very good candidate for
relationship
with the Flash, despite who she is. I mean, if she picked up like, you know, something from the museum and whacked Captain Boomerang in the head with it or something, that would have went a long way, you know, knocked him out for a minute. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she trips and goes into the mirror, and Flash doesn't hesitate to go after her, of course. And it's not, he would have done that for anybody. He's like, hold on, lady. And he just jumps in.
He calls her lady.
Yeah.
But he doesn't even know her name.
Right. Yeah. I don't even know if he realizes she's a reporter because he didn't basically pay any attention to her. So,
yeah.
So what do you guys think about the mirror dimension that they fall into?
Oh, that's trippy and cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was a nice callback. I don't know if they were deliberately doing this, but there was an episode of the Superpowered Team Galactic Guardians episode where they had Mirror Master, and I believe it was Superman who got caught in the mirror dimension. So yeah, he was going around the different mirrors, you know, trying to figure out where he could go. Anyway, so yeah, it was a really cool visual.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. It reminded me of Monsters Incorporated with all the doors, kind of, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
And I know you love that Flash asked Linda, you mind if I carry you? And she answers,
I actually didn't have a problem with that.
Oh, really?
Because for the simple fact is, he could get lost from her.
Yeah.
How's he going to keep her safe where he knows where she's at?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's fine. I do have a problem with where she's like, yes, please.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
You know, not the fact that he carried her. I really don't have a problem with that. But the fact that, oh, yes. Oh, my knickers just slid off.
Oh, God.
We're in a mirror dimension that I don't know if we're ever going to get out of, but now now it's time for romance. You know? Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, God.
You brought up Captain Cold earlier that he was kind of a little sinister there, Steve. Mm-hmm. It's he's disappointed because Mirror Master tells him Flash is trapped in a mirror dimension forever. And he says, I was all set to crack some bones. Yeah, he was out for, you know, to get pretty gruesome, but Orion is ready to oblige him, though. So he takes a big swing at him. He then, you know, he blasts Orion with enough ice to completely encase him, and then Boomerang throws an explosive boomerang at him, and his helmet flies off, but he's still getting up. So Cold hits him again, which does show that, you know, Orion just keeps coming, yeah, which I like. And then Mirror Master sneaks up on Batman with a wire garrote to, like,
I know,
choke him, like, strangle him with. It's like, damn, that's pretty brutal.
And I had forgot about that because I told Chris, I said, is that a garrote?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like piano wire, you know? It's like, geez.
Yeah, they were not messing around here, you know?
No, and I like, you know, that Batman, the Batman theme plays when they turn around and Batman's standing there, of course. But Cold freezes Batman's legs. But Batman pulls a gun, which I think is interesting. Of course, it's like a flare gun, and he fires it, and it bounces off displays and into one of the mirrors. And Mirror Master says, "Missed me." And Batman gives him a very Spock-like eyebrow raise. I love that, as if to say, "Did I?" You know, you know, just like it's a very Leonard Nimoy, you know, kind of you know, type thing. I love that.
And it's such a baller move too, because Batman, he knew what was going on. He knew that while he was trapped in the dimension, like how he figured all that out, who knows? Maybe he went in already knowing everything he needed to know about the Mirror Master, knowing Batman.
Probably, yeah.
And so he knew to get Wally out, he'd have to send them that flare. And then not only did he just shoot it into a mirror, he bounced it off multiple objects.
Yeah,
go into a mirror. I'm like, all right, cool, Batman. You've scored a big one there.
If Bruce Wayne wasn't rich, he could be rich from being a billiards champion based on this. Yeah. Luckily, Batman brands his flare guns, so Flash knows to follow it out because it's got a bat symbol on it. And I like that Batman's like, okay, I need to get the Flash out of there. Plus, I need his help. We need the Flash to take care of these guys. Boomer's about to kill Batman, saying, this will make my rep forever. So even in Central City, Batman is a big deal,
right,
which I like, you know. Flash comes through with Linda, knocking them all down, uses Boomer's boomerang to free Orion, who then pulls up a water line from the floor and turns it on Cold, blasting him with his own weapon and encasing him in ice, which I thought was a nice touch.
The only thing I wish is that they'd like showed a water fountain in the background so you knew, you know, how did he know that there was a water line there?
Well, I mean, there's got to be water lines, you know.
I know, but, you know, to me, that for a kid's cartoon, that would have been a nice touch.
Yeah. Flash frees Batman, and Bats throws a batarang at the mirror. Mirror Master is diving into, shattering it, apparently trapping him not in the dimension, but in the shards of the mirror. So what did you guys think of that?
I thought it was cool. You know, I was trying to figure out where, if anything like that had ever happened again, because I know in the comics, because I know that Mirror Master has gotten trapped in the dimension before, but the idea of his body being broken across different shards, I'm like, okay, that's an interesting, you know, bit. And also it leads to like a really humorous moment at the end. But I thought it was cool. I thought it worked nicely.
Yeah, he's like, make sure you get every piece. I want to, you know.
A full accounting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We see Orion put his helmet back on, and we see that his face is his natural angry face, not the version after Mother Box calms him and makes him more handsome. He's got the big bushy eyebrows and everything. So, very Kirby-like eyebrows. So,
yes.
Yeah. Cold is still frozen and loaded in the truck via Dolly and the berry, like, the Barry look-alike guy from the crime lab is the one sweeping up Mirror Master, which is a nice little touch again. And then we've already went through it, so we won't get into Linda laying it on thick. Wally with the Flash. It's just really, it's kind of painful to watch, honestly. Yeah. It's one of the few, like, truly cringy moments in the entire Justice League Unlimited series.
I mean, honestly, if I could get away with this and not like sound like a big jackass at a Comic-Con, this is a question that I'd want to seriously get an answer to. Like, what were you guys thinking with your characterization of Linda? What were you trying for here? Like, what? Because it didn't work, buddy. You know, I would probably not have the cojones to actually ask that,
yeah,
because I would look like a major jackass. But
I'd ask but, it. But,
yeah, she
oh,
would.
Well, then you and I need to go to a Comic-Con together, Cindy, so you can ask it, and I can get the answer I've been wanting all this time.
Yeah. There you go.
Of course, Flash says he's just happy he got to be on TV, and he really knows how to work a crowd, so they all laugh. You know? Yeah. I like that. And Orion thinks he's got him figured out. You play the fool to hide a warrior's pain, which I'm like, mm-hmm. Where did you get that, dude?
Yeah.
It's like, go, you, like he sits up like under the beautiful trees and you know, on New Genesis and reads bad poetry or something. I don't know, like angst poetry or something. Yeah. And I love Flash puts his arm on his shoulder and he casually addresses him with, dude, bad guys went down and nobody got hurt. You know what I call that? A really good day. And then we pan up to the smiling Flash statue and fade to black. So, yeah. So that sum up the Flash pretty well for you, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, at least how he's being depicted in the series. I mean, Wally is somewhat different, obviously, in the comic book.
Yeah.
But the I don't want to say like eternally positive outlook, but his ability to just cut to what's important, you know, even though he really likes the attention and he, you know, he's really feeling connected to the people. But that's just it. Like, he feels connected to these people and he knows exactly what's important out of all of this. And I think that's one of the things that Batman sees in him and really respects about why he is such a great hero, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think the Flash, because the power of super speed, we'd all like to be able to just take off and run fast. It's like Superman. We'd all like to just fly in the air. It's a positive power that begets a positive hero, or it should. Mm-hmm. So when they're not treated that way, it to many fans, it reads false, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And I like that here because it's just, you know, yeah, I mean, he's up against some pretty dangerous people, but his positive outlook is also one of his superpowers, you know?
Agreed.
Which I think is great. So you guys want to jump into our superlatives?
Absolutely.
Power action feature.
Okay, so for power action feature, what did you have, Steve? The big kapow moment.
I don't know if this fits or not, because it's not really a superpower, but and it's going to probably shock a few people because I am such a Flash fan, but I've got to go with Batman shooting the flare gun. Just ricocheting that off of so many objects and knowing that that's what he needed to do. You know, and that's actually the move that brings down the rogues. You know, if he hadn't done that, Flash would be trapped in the mirror dimension because God bless Wally and, you know, God help Linda. They never would have found their way out of that mirror dimension in time.
Yeah, probably not.
But so to me, that was the big moment. Like, that was the clincher. If that didn't happen, they would not have brought down the rogues the way they did.
Right. Okay. What about you, Cindy?
I'd say when he changed into his outfit, because not only does that showcase his speed, it showcases his intelligence that he came up with that. Mm. So that's the reason, you know, that's a twofer.
Yeah.
That's my close second. Yeah. But I'm like having to be fair. Yeah. That would have been, you could have changed mine out for that one and I would be happy.
I like both of those. My favorite is actually, not a real superpower moment, but to me, it's like the most powerful moment is the Flash actually just how he handles the trickster, how he talks to him, and he relates to him. He makes him feel like he's his friend,
that he's seen,
that he's safe, and you know that you know he can get more out of him than Batman intimidating him or Orion beating him. You know,
yeah.
Exactly. I've complained across many podcasts that, you know, nowadays Batman's more of a brawler and a bruiser, and this is very much the antithesis of that. And I really like that. So, yeah.
Rotating chairperson.
So for rotating chairperson, Steve, who'd you have for this one?
Again, I'm going to shock people. I'm going to go with Batman on this.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because, like I said earlier in the episode, and today with our discussion, Batman, as good an episode as this was for Wally, I think this was an even better episode for Batman because it really emphasizes what a caring and human person, a human character he is. He cares enough about Wally to go and to, you know, be a presence there for him. He's there to obviously help support Wally, trying to keep the rogues from killing him. He has the moment, in my opinion, that really clinches the victory at the end. I think as good as Wally comes across in this episode, Batman is, it was a great moment or great episode for Batman in so many respects.
Okay. I can see that. Okay. What about you, Cindy? Mm-hmm.
It's the Flash. I mean, it's his episode. Yeah. So, you know, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I had to go with Flash. I appreciate you picking Batman.
Oh yeah, I do too. I get Steve's point of view.
I respect
both of you enough to let you be wrong.
When we pick your hero, okay. I think this is practically a pilot for Flash, the animated series, and it just amazes me that this has never happened. Why there hasn't been a separate Flash animated series, you know, it's there's so much potential here. So, and speaking of so much potential, Justice League Communicator, there are so many great lines in this episode. What was your favorite exchange, Steve?
Well, keeping it going with the shocking moments here, my favorite line, just because of the heavy context that was in it and how wonderfully timed it was, is Batman saying, "What time?" You know? Because again, that shows like Batman, he's really throwing Wally a bone here and saying, "I'm going to support you because I respect you and we're friends, we're teammates," you know. And but it's also done in such a Batman way. He doesn't turn around to Wally and say, "Wally, I know this is important to you, so I'm going to be there." He just says, "What time?" Communicate so much in that. So I'm like, they knew what they were doing. They wrote that line. Really good line.
Hey, guys. So looks like Superman and GL are in space. Wonder Woman's doing disasters.
Why are you here?
Oh, right. Because it's Flash Appreciation Day. Yeah, it'll be great. I understand if everybody's too busy to come. No biggie. My mom's going to be there. Let's see. My uncle's flying in. Be great if one of the original seven made it. I mean, okay, yeah, it's a Flash museum, but to me, the whole league deserves the honor. All of us. Like I said, no biggie.
What time?
Yeah, that is great. What about you, Cindy?
I'm going to go with the non-communicator and anything Linda Park said.
Okay.
It sticks in my craw so much, I'm just like, nope.
When we come back, I'll try to get with him. Get to him for an interview. Are we off? Jeez, he's a total babe. Like the entire track team at once. I can't believe you're not into him, Marla.
Okay, now you're off.
There you are.
Time out, time out!
You mind if I carry you?
Please. Flash, what about the new museum? It got destroyed in the battle and it was our biggest shrine to you. And you're our greatest hero, our greatest hope.
Oh,
Cindy,
wow.
Cindy, you ought to do your own, like, take the episode and edit it, but you rewrite the lines and you record them as Linda, you know, and just have the Cindy cut of this episode.
I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, I almost have to say, out of every episode that we've done of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, I would say this might be the worst part I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Anything portrayed by the Tim verse.
It's worse than War World.
It is. As far as something that goes against what has been portrayed in the comics, what has been portrayed by every strong female character that's been portrayed and written by the same team, I'm like, what on earth? Who pissed you off that day? Who hurt you that you had to write a character that's such a strong person like this?
But in their defense, though, I'm not trying to defend them too much, but in their defense, there are people like that. Now, Linda shouldn't be like that.
I realize that, and that's my like point. That. When you already have a pre-established character, you're not talking about somebody new that you're just introducing. This is Linda Park, and they totally
Toss it up.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, no.
Okay. I get you. Yeah. I get you. Yeah.
I get it, Cindy. I'm right there with you.
Mine is the very funny right after the one you mentioned, Steve, is the "you're a stand-up guy, Bats. Don't ever let them call you a crazed loner." I get a chuckle out of that every time because it's so fun. And the way Batman, and then at that point, Batman does kind of give him a look and he's like, "Oh, well, I got a lot of stuff to do." You know, he's like, "Oh, I shouldn't have probably said that out loud." You know?
Yeah. Batman's like, "Don't press your luck, kid. I'm already going to this thing."
Yeah.
"No. You're really coming? Awesome. You're a stand-up guy, Bats. Don't ever let them call you a crazed loner." "Well, I got a lot to do. I'm getting the key to the city today. I need to practice my museum speech. And hey, I better polish my boots."
Comic connections.
So for comic connections, anything that stands out to you, Steve? This whole thing's a comic connection, really.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know where to start because, everything is... Yeah, I mean the idea of the Flash Museum itself is just a huge comic connection because the Flash Museum has been part of the Flash mythology for the longest time, has factored into a lot of the stories and everything that's in it, you know, is part of the Flash lore. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, we didn't mention it, but I have to go back to the episode, but I seem to remember, wasn't there a cosmic treadmill or at least a treadmill being shown at some point?
There's a treadmill in Wally's apartment. I forgot to mention. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
It looks like the cosmic treadmill. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's definitely a love letter to all the Flash mythology that had been building up since, you know, Barry Allen's appearance, first appearance. And, this whole episode's a comic connection. I don't know what else you can say.
Yeah, me too. Anything that jumped out at you, Cindy, other than the...
No.
Obvious, yeah. Of course, the big things for me, the Jay Garrick and the Kid Flash costume elements. But yeah, the whole thing's comic connection, so...
Electricity is evil.
Electricity is evil. I don't think there was any electricity in this, which is odd considering it's about the Flash.
Right.
Yeah,
push back then,
unless you want to go with ice.
ice
for Orion.
Yeah, ice is evil now. Yeah, of course, back then the Flash didn't throw lightning and things like that like he's doing now, and then that's a more recent thing in the comics and the TV show and then the movie and things like that. So yeah. So final thoughts on this one, Steve?
I give it a thumbs up. I really loved it. It's a fun episode. The black mark for me, like I said, is the Linda Park thing. But it's one of these character episodes that this show did so well, like that by the end of the episode, you have a further appreciation not only for Wally, but for Batman and the relationship that the two of them have. The title, the Flash and Substance title, is a really cool title because it really shows that this Orion learns this. Like, the Flash seems to be this fool. He's just like a flash in the pan, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of substance to him. There's a lot more going on for him that, you know, Batman knows and Batman is acknowledging and supporting.
Yeah. I agree. What about you, Cindy?
Ditto.
Except for Linda. Except for Linda. Yeah.
He said that.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of my absolute favorite episodes of the entire run, and one I have gone back and rewatched more than many others. It's fun. It's heartfelt. Mm-hmm. It really does capture that hometown hero vibe that the Flash almost always had from Barry forward. You know, just like he's like the local hero. He's also a Justice Leaguer and he saves the world, but he's got that local hero. And it also shows that Wally has grown from a young, self-absorbed horn dog in the early days of this show, or at least the way he portrayed himself to the league.
Uh-huh. Sure.
But we do see that underneath, he's an everyman hero who really does care about everyone, even people like the Trickster.
Right.
So it's just one of the best, I think, other than the Linda part, which now I do dislike more than I did before. So, and I knew sitting there watching Cindy, I could just feel her. I mean, we've watched this episode many times, but with a critical eye, I could just feel Cindy tensing up on the couch as we watched this one. Whenever when Linda showed up, I could just like, oh, this is going to be fun. So,
well, it's not to add more to it. It's one of those things that adds insult to injury. Had they had a generic female reporter character act like that, I probably wouldn't have batted an eyelash about it.
Yeah. Right, right.
But because it was Linda.
Yes.
That's kind of like, no, you got it wrong there, guys.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks as always, Steve, for stopping by and helping us discuss The Flash.
I appreciate you guys having me. It's been fun. And Cindy, I'm sorry. We've gone a little over what the time you, it wasn't my fault. I try not to talk any more than I.
We're good. You guys, we started late because you guys had to have your educator,
bit session.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, very good.
And that's fine. That's great. That's very therapeutic for me both. So, where can folks find you on the interweb, Steve?
Well, I'm on the internet all the time. I'm on Facebook. I'm on X. Twitter. I have a blog. It's a Givens blog, which I have plans to actually get back to this summer. I actually have a summer ahead of me now where I can actually sit down and do some writing again. Nice. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm going to be bringing back some things I was doing with the blog through the week on a weekly basis, hopefully. I've got a movie coming out next month. I was in a local director cast me in his film. I get to play the bad guy the end of the film. The film is called The End of the Run, and I just released, or the trailer got released, and I've been sharing it out on social media. And so I'll be going to the premiere of that next month, and we'll be sharing pictures and any video I can of that. I'm trying to coast on my last bit of gas to get through the end of the school year.
Preach, brother.
Well, that's really awesome. I didn't know we had a movie star on the show. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, you know, I do local theater. I'm in local community theater, and the guy who was directing it directed me in a production of Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. And a play that a local theater did. And he was like, hey, you want to come play the bad guy in this film that I'm doing? I'm like, sure. You know, and there's one scene, oh God, he makes me do what I told him was an exposition dump. And it was just one of these where I've got these long monologues. And then the guy who I'm in the scene with, he has like one line.
Oh.
And then I've got paragraphs, and then he's got one line. I'm like, God damn it. I'm giving you all this stuff to do. But anyway, I can't complain because I'm in a film. Now I have a film credit, so I'm happy about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I can imagine a John Byrne panel with a big giant word balloon coming out of your head. Exposition dump. You know.
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely look forward to that. We'll put the links to in the show notes so everybody can check that out. I'm going to have to check that out. Yeah, and I like that it's got Run in the title, too. That's very fitting for you.
Yes. Very good. Thank you guys again. This has been so awesome to talk with you all.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Steve. It's always you're always welcome here, and it's great to have you back on this episode because we know how much you love The Flash and you've helped
Indeed.
Us cover him in the past. So,
I know this episode will be out afterwards, but please have a wonderful Mother's Day. I hope you enjoy the weekend, and weather is beautiful here in Delaware. I hope you guys have beautiful weather in Kentucky for this.
It's pretty nice outside. It's a little cooler it's going to be pretty nice.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks to everyone who listens, likes, and shares JLUcast. Your support really helps. Extra special thanks to our Patreon supporters for information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Visit patreon.com/FWPodcast. Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club Podcast, David Capoon, Rocket Dan Johnson, and Chuck Carvello. We'd also like to give a special shout out to our newest patron, Knights Who Say Sledge, who, like the others here, selected this series for his name drop. So who would like to volunteer to help clean up the Flash Museum? Just be sure to turn in any pieces of broken mirror you find laying about. So we really need to pick those up. And also, if you can find out what the deal is with the Kid Flash costume, I would really, really, really like to know. So next time, Season 3's tour of the DCU takes us to far-off Nanda Parbat, and we all know whose spirit lurks there. And folks who follow the network know the FW All-Star who really digs that particular spirit. So we'll see you then.
Bye.
JLU Cast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLU Cast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLU Cast.
Where are the others?
Those crabby hacks can go plug a hole for all I care, but I'm not about to rat them out.
Orion. Talk while you still have a jaw.
Hey, would you guys please take it down a notch? Let me handle this. James, you're off your meds, aren't you?
I'm better off without them. Take them if I start feeling down.
You know that's not how the medicine works. You're not well.
I'm fine. You want to throw some darts?
No. Listen, James, you're wearing the suit again.
I am? Well, what do you know?
Here's the deal, buddy. Tell me where those guys went, and I promise to come see you in the hospital. We'll play darts. The soft kind.
Okay. They're gonna ambush you at the Flash Museum.
See? That's all we needed. Come on, we better get over there.
What about your enemy?
Oh, right. Dude, as soon as you finish your drink, turn yourself in.
Got me again, Flash.